Okay, guys, so time to start the next session about advanced Windows monitoring. We're going to talk about a couple of techniques that we can hopefully find useful whenever it's about troubleshooting a certain situations. So I'm sure that you had a coffee in the break, and I hope you got one, because it's going to be, I hope as well, pretty intense. First of all, if you haven't been on the first session, then let me quickly introduce myself. If you've been on the previous session, then I'm sorry, I have to do it. So my name is Paula, and I'm a penetration tester. And I am the person that technically gets in or participates in the projects within Witchy to get into the certain types of systems. And security is technically my passion. So anything that is related to digging into, and security is a perfect place related to digging into and doing the research and going deep, because a couple of things are hidden, I'm really happy to discover them. And that's basically myself. I'm not working alone. I'm working in a company that is named Secure, and security is my company. We do have 6 guys working with us and 1 girl, very smart girl, not me, of course. Basically, what we are doing all the stuff that I described. So I'm not the only one, because sometimes we just connect the brain forces and we figure out what else interesting can be done within the infrastructure security. At the end, of course, I'm on the good side, because I really care about security. It's nice to break in, whatever that means. Sometimes it's through vulnerability, sometimes it's through, as we were discussing on the last session, misconfiguration. But it always brings a pleasure. But at the end, it's nice to know how to troubleshoot things, how to monitor things, and how to secure things. And that's what this session is about. So it's going to be less cool from the hacking perspective, and it's going to be a little bit more from what you can do whenever you've got a problem with your infrastructure. OK, guys, so let's move along. And again, one more time, whenever we are thinking about bringing something to the field, Mark, and again, he must like me right now or hate me very much, because I always like to talk about his book, because it's really useful. Like, really. Sometimes I'm coming back to it, and I'm reading it. I read it like a couple of times, and still, I'm not saying it's like difficult and we need to give many times to it to understand. No, no. Sometimes there are so many things going on around that you just don't remember things. And then you need the thing and the place to go to remind yourself about how is it about these Windows internals. And Mark says that in his book. He's not the only author, because there's also David Salomon and Alex Ionescu, also very smart guys. But this book always is very nice if it's about where we should refer to. There are also 2 books that I will recommend after this session. One of the books, it's called Inside Windows Debugging. And Inside Windows Debugging book, it is meant to be for developers, but no, not really. If you are IT pro with the gig for troubleshooting, then definitely it's going to be for you, because we're going to talk about ETW, Event Tracing for Windows, the platform that allows us to trace for anything that is basically in Windows. Okay, another book that I should mention over here, it is the Advanced Windows Debugging. So Inside Windows Debugging, Advanced Windows Debugging. This debugging word, it doesn't mean that in the book you will hear only about the debugging. Debugging in the meaning of troubleshooting, digging into. So definitely 2 books that are, one is even funny sometimes, I must tell you. Like when you read it, it's like the author had a sense of humor. It's hard to believe how about such a boring things like a debugging, which are cool, at the same time, you can make something nice about it. But yes, he did. Anyway, so major conclusion and my goal for this session is very, very simple. Know the tools, know the platforms, and know the monitoring techniques. And I would like to treat it as my personal goal that after, of course, you leave this room, maybe you know a couple of these tools. I'm sure you do. But maybe you're going to pick just one tool, just one, that you feel like, that's interesting, and you're going to open it, install it at home, and have fun with it. That's my personal goal. My kind of not personal goal is, of course, to make you a little bit more interesting about the tools, about the techniques, and about the platforms. So have a look inside Windows, because anything that we are playing with can be monitored. And then it's just like, you know, this T-Mobile or whatever, Verizon deals that you sign or anything that you sign, there's like, look deeper, like down there, like take a loop, like, and then there's this asterisk. It's like, but that excludes this. Yes? So in Windows, it's kind of the same, but that means, but you need to have appropriate tools. Yes? And as long as we do have appropriate tools, Windows is fully troubleshooted. It is an operating system that is approved by military organizations, follows common criteria. Anything can be monitored just because we do have platforms that basically allow for that. Okay, guys. Make sense? Okay, very good. So let's move along. First of all, I'm going to kick with a small agenda, of course. And that particular agenda is going to be very, very short. As always, we are talking about toolkit, monitoring techniques, and that's it. Before we jump and before we start, I would like to launch one tool. This is the most unfriendly tool that I can imagine. Unfortunately, it looks like this. It's like, what the heck is this? Symbol type viewer. Oh my God, what does it mean? Like, ugh. Some developer wrote it, you know, in between coffees. Anyway, it's a pretty cool tool. So what kind of stuff we can have over here? First of all, file. Aha, so I need to put here some file. Let me actually do it. The file that I'm going to put over here, it's something that we used to call kernel mode. NTOS kernel. This is Windows kernel. So I'm going to just like have a look inside the Windows kernel. Yes, I will. Next thing, I need to specify the symbol path. What are symbols? Well, if you ever was planning, for example, to learn the phone book by heart, have you tried that? If you did, you know that it's harder to do it by numbers than by names. Yes, it's the same in operating system functions. There's a lot of those. There's a lot of numbers that it would be nice if they were translated to names. And this is what symbols are doing. I had my moment in my life when I was younger that I wanted to learn all services and ports by heart, but I kind of failed. So, yeah, everybody has such moments. Okay, so server, it's going to be, and this is kind of funny. It's like, oh, what should I pick? Oh, I'll get so many choices. Oh, I don't know. Actually, help me. Microsoft server. Ah! Okay, so what kind of stuff we've got over here? I told you, in between coffees, right? So these are the Microsoft symbols. This link, it always stays the same. If I will not have stuff that I need, this tool will go to the Microsoft webpage and bring it to me. Why do I need the symbols? To see what is in the kernel mode. Get symbols. It takes a small moment. I do already have symbols, but it verifies if there is anything new. Okay. Then I can expand it. And then, God, don't get me wrong, it's the most unpleasant view ever, because this, yeah, sorry for that. That defines us. I'm going to go to the certain place, by the way. That defines us, what we can do with the operating system from the kernel mode perspective. And these are the structures that we can play with whenever, for example, we are doing something in operating system. If things are not there, they're not allowed. Over. And that's what I said on the previous session. Operating system is just a piece of code. If you grab from the internet, System Center Operations Manager is a good example, but anyway, if you grab from the internet any kind of cool tool that will present you information in a cool way, and Microsoft does not have that in, for example, even Viewer, it's crap. Agree, no doubts, okay. But for the fact that you can see information, it's because Microsoft operating system allows for that. And again, kind of obvious, but it's nice to know that everything is possible just because somebody said yes. So, just because somebody said yes about monitoring, event tracing for Windows, so the monitoring that I'm talking about, is possible within the scope that somebody allowed to. But the thing is that it's so cool that this time somebody said yes many times to many things, and we are able to move around with a lot of information about what is working, what is not working. How many times have you seen the application that was not responding? Probably many, yes? And what do you think that? It's like, oh, what a crappy Windows, what a crappy app. I mean, something is crappy for sure. Yes? What a crappy developer, what a crappy day. Yes? So actually, I'm not saying that I'm happy when I see it. I'm more happy when I see blue screen, and I'm serious about it. And we're going to talk about blue screens as well. But whenever, for example, someone has another responding application, I'm like, oh, so you want to tell me a message? Like, what kind of message? Maybe just because you are hardworking. That's good. I like when things are hardworking, yes? So maybe it's just that. Or maybe we should establish some type of monitoring during that time and see. Yes? Instead of, something is crappy. So, what I would like to talk about. This is what we can do. Of course, if you want to dig in, I don't want to be boring, truly. But if you go to the structure format view, over here, you're going to find out areas that you can touch in a certain ways. Have a look, it's a pretty cool tool. Maybe even tracing for Windows here, so ETW, it's not that interesting to read, but eProcess defines as the structure of the process. It's like whenever you've got the internet, you've got the forms that are mandatory to be filled in. The same is with the process. If you don't fill in process ID, sorry, process, it's not there. Sorry. Process is a name, process has a resources, process has handles, process has process ID. So if things are not there, and you will see it over there, then you will know we will not have a process. Okay, so bringing the story back to the field. What kind of techniques, what kind of tools we've got? I promise that we're going to start from a simple machine. And my machine, running happily over here, this is the machine that I got. Let me blank the screen at the beginning, and we're going to have it a little bit cleaner. This is my machine that runs over here. What I did within the break time, if we sort out stuff by name, we can try it to do it like this. We can, for example, verify what kind of processes we've got here. So this is just a regular task manager. Very good. And if I go to the bottom, to the kind of end letter thing, supposed to be over here somewhere, then let me enlarge it so that everybody can see it. Question is, do we have Notepad over here? Of course, no, we do not. Do we have Notepad over here? Yes. Do we have Notepad over here? No. So what's the point? Is someone hiding? Of course, yes. So this is basically, I really like this technique. I really do. Because and Task Manager and Process Explorer is all the same. These are using the same tiny technique. It's called, as I mentioned on the last session, active process links. Active process links, what does it mean? It means that if we do have a process here, and I'm the process, and if we do have a process here, so we've got three processes, and if I point to this, and this guy points to me, and that works on the other side, this guy points to me, and I point to him, if that's going to be like this, and this guy points to him, and this guy points to another person, another process, then nobody points to me. It's as simple. If you take kids, they're going to hold each other's hands. It's going to be, we don't like you, and other hands. And the girl is like, wah. So basically, that's going to be the process that's going to be in the memory. And it's going to be like, I'm standing here, everybody can see me. Can I talk to you? Yeah, I can talk to you. Can everybody talk to me? Everybody can talk to me. I'm just a process, but nobody just likes me. So it's the same situation in operating system. Why it's so, like, crappy? I mean, it would be so, is it so easy? Yeah, it's so sad. Yeah, it is so easy. It is about changing the links. So any kind of rootkits, any kind of malware, any kind of anybody that has access to our kernel, meaning running as an admin, then these guys can do that. They can hide. But sincerely, no. Hidden means what? That we cannot find it. But I bought this operating system. It's mine. It means I can find things because it's mine. So What can we do? Well, we can find out, based on what we know, that within the operating system, we do have a mechanism that is called handles, right? So view full screen mode. handles. So basically, whenever we go to the Process Explorer, let's say, and I got here the lower pane, I can display DLLs or handles. I'm gonna display DLLs, actually. The reason why I will do it is because I would like to see to which processes we do have handles. Could be like that. Then what I need to do, you see these two guys over here, local security, client server runtime systems. These are the guys, they know. These guys, they know. So if you ask them, they will answer. But we need to ask appropriate question. So what we can ask these guys for? We can ask them, hey, can you tell me to which processes you've got a handle? Handle is a handshake, the same story. How many times you got a situation that you want to safely remove a USB drive, but it says, it's busy. It means because the handle was not closed. If you close the handle, then you can safely remove it. It's the same story over here. He knows about all these things because he manages them. And for the fact that they are not on some list, I don't care. So what we can do, we can basically go to the client-server runtime subsystem, and we can verify, maybe maybe let me go to the handle view, it's going to be a little bit better. And here we can verify what kind of handles we've got managed by the client-server runtime subsystem. And technically, I know it's a lot of details, but what we can do, we are supposed to browse through that list and verify, is there anything, of course there are some handles created and so on, is there like anything that we can, for example, spot? Because if there is, for example, a process that he keeps the handles for, even though this list over there, they say, oh, we don't know about such lady working here, but she is in the building. Somebody, it's in the building, and that's this kind of building here. Building knows. So we do know, because we say, not existing process. Do you have a cat, guys? Maybe you do have a dog or cat, but I'm sure you've seen the cat's behavior. When there's a curtain, like by the window, cat is getting crazy. He is like hiding behind the curtain, but whole butt and tail is out. It's like, nobody can see me. So stupid. It's the same here. Nobody can see me, I'm hiding. Non-existent process. Oh, by the way, my process ID is at 3200. Maybe I should not say it, yes. Come on. So how we are able to find that, yes? I mean, this is some process. We can, of course, kill it by the process ID. Okay. But of course, if we do have debugger, if you do have debugger, and I do have a debugger that is attached to this certain machine, you can debug things locally. If you see such things, it means somebody was there. And if you see such things, I am able to do exclamation mark process 0N3200 with the zero flag, which means the basic information, WinDBG, debugging tools for Windows. And then, enter. What's that? Notepad. It wasn't on the list, wasn't it? But it's there. There are no two things in operating system, always, ever and ever. Things in operating system cannot get anonymous, cannot be anonymous. This is the first thing. Second, they cannot be hidden. So just two things over here. And basically, with Notepad, as you see, it's not an orphanized process floating somewhere happily in a memory. Mm-mm. It cannot, because fields must be filled in. And one of these fields, it's a handle. Yes? So at that stage, it's easy to find anything that is hiding. And all these rootkit revealers, magical tools, and so on, Windows allows for that anyway. So why not solve it on your own with your own things? Pick it up, don't worry. Mommy? No, I'm just kidding. Oh, now you will dislike me, I'm sorry. Okay, I will just shut up because I'm saying too much. Okay, if you are sitting in the first row, probably you see how red right now I am, but okay. So let's begin, yeah? Logman. first tool, yes? Very cool tool, very, very cool tool. It's a built-in tool in Windows, by the way. So just a tiny comment. What can LogMan do for us? Well, a lot. It can, for example, use something that we call provider, provider of information. And it is called provider. LogMan, it's a built-in tool, as we said. So what we can trace with it? Well, if you're a fan of establishing performance monitoring using the command line tool, it's going to be for you. But LogMan also allows for something that we call event tracing for Windows, ETW. Event tracing for Windows, it's the one that, of course, I showed you at the beginning. And LogMan can attach to the certain provider. Provider, it's an element, it's a function in operating system that will give you information from the whole scope. Because if you say, I want them all, well, great, but performance monitoring has impact on performance, even though it sounds a little bit ironic, but that depends how you set it up. If you set up, I want them all, particularly if you're going to monitor threats, which is a lot of those, and they're changing and so on, if you want them all, then the performance monitoring can impact up to 20% of the regular system performance when you do performance monitoring for everything. So it's a bad idea. Normally, it is around 1-2% impact on the performance monitoring. So that's quite okay, because we want to know. And so be careful with LogMan. Of course, anything that I said, it must have a small demo. And that demo, in this case, for LogMan, let me move to the full screen again. It's going to be about certain situation. That certain situation, let me go to the performance. Let me go to the network. And that certain situation is basically related to communication over the network. And right now, this tiny tool, it's a kind of crappy because it does not really show me the interval is too slow. But what's going to come is going to come. If not, then I will show you the other way how to spot it. What if, let's imagine, you've got a situation that somebody communicates over the network, well, we don't know it yet, and you look at your interface bandwidth usage, and you've got this peak, 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 yes? And you're like, what does this peak? How to map the network communication to the process? Suggestions. Ta-da! I told you, coffee is necessary. Okay, so how to do it? Well, a couple of things. We can, for example, run the command line, and then let's say, maybe I'll move over here, netstat could be, minus A and B could be, for searching for processes. Okay, no problem. That's going to be kind of terrible view, but let's say do more, yeah? Okay, so what kind of information do we see over here? Well, we do see like some processes attached to the communication. Okay, what we are searching for? Something. We don't know yet, yes? We can, of course, run some sniffer here. Let's do it. And then let's see what kind of type of traffic we are searching for with what kind of address IP, before we make a decision if it's good or wrong. Wireshark or network monitor? Which one do you like? Wow. Okay, let's do Wireshark. So, capture interfaces. Okay, then let's start it. And then we do have some communication, of course, going on. We can try to filter it out, but I don't have much going on. So maybe we can just focus on some type of communication, yes? And basically, over here, we do see communication, like something is going on. I mean, apparently, it's there. And it is the source 200 and source 10, so it's clearly communication in between 10 and 200. And what we are doing over here, we are doing HTTP GETs. And I mean, this is this peak. It happens one in 15 minutes, let's say. It's hard to spot that. So what is it? What is going on? So see here, we've got this get update.txt, and over from 200 to 10, we do have a response. 200 means okay, that this is your message. Okay, that's kind of cool, because that maybe will allow us to see what kind of data we've got sent over this communication. Okay, so let me do like this. Let me go to the very bottom. And then we see here the message that is said, still no updates. It's like, Okay, so something is definitely communicating, yes? We here do not see what's that. It's just like, maybe you would just run the sniffer for the moment, and then you're like, okay, I don't know what's that. So how to go to the point? Maybe let me stop capturing, yeah? So we've got two addresses. Our address, I can tell you, it's 10, 10, 10, 10. It's very easy. So what else can we see? Let's move along. We've got a couple of processes. Of course, we can review. If there is a communication with 10, 10, 10, 200, well, not really. We can go farther. Then, basically, maybe we can even go farther. And that's something interesting that we've got over here, yes? We've got, for example, here, Elsa's. That is communicating with 200. Could be. And then we can go farther, 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 farther. And there is some communication also going on, yes? Let me do tiny thing, if you don't mind, because our communication is kind of net stop. Come, oh no. That should be, no, no. Oh, sorry, it's my fault. Okay, okay, that's good, okay. Our communication might be a little bit trashy, but that's okay, that's okay. And here, we've got the local security authority subsystem that was responsible for that kind of communication. So we can go to the top, yes? Or we can try to run it one more time and so on. So what should be the next step, by the way? Maybe I can repeat it even. That's gonna be a little bit more clean when we will have it. So we do have also here some information that we cannot obtain the ownership information, and it is this one, this communication. We can go even farther, and then we've got Elsa's, could be as well. And this is some communication also going on. What should be the next step? Should we kill the process? No, because we're gonna have a blue screen, yes? Local security authority subsystem. That basically will cause us a blue screen. So how else can we go to obtain who really is sending that kind of information? Like, what can we do? So basically, within operating system, so let me clean it out, Control-C, CLS, we do have this logman that I've mentioned. Logman allows us to establish a session, tracing session, that's gonna grab the information from the provider. And here comes the question, what's the provider? Where the network packets are prepared, so that later on, when they are prepared, they go out. It's still operating system, it's not the network, it's operating system, yes? So they must be prepared somewhere. What's that gonna be? And the answer is WinSoc. It's like, why WinSoc? Well, WinSoc is a kind of waiting room. Can we go out, please? Yes? And WinSoc is like, okay, good, good. These are your parameters, good, good, good. Okay, so if somebody says, oh, that's the packet for you, then we will be able to see that. Okay, let me have a look deeper. Logman allows us to create a session. So logman, and then you specify the session. And how do we do it? Well, question mark, yes, I know, allows us to prepare and start a session. It's, I mean, you got a lot of reading, yes? But anyway, logman is a built-in tool. It's a very cool tool. So, logman, and then start. And then we need to specify the session name. Let's say ABC, could be. And then we need to specify ETS. ETS kind of leaves the door open. Because we are establishing the kernel tracing session. That means that we will be able to listen to what is going on inside, but we need to have the capability to talk and change the settings within the session to be able to stop it. So let's basically do it. So ETS. And then I will need to specify the output file. So let's say abc.etl. And then I need to specify the provider. Microsoft, Windows, WinSoc, AFD. How do we know it? Well, if you go to MSDN, or I will show you another source, then you can list the available providers. And logman can also list the providers. So provider, it's the deliverer of information. We are almost good to go, yes? Very good. Command completed successfully. Oh, thank you, and then what? Yes? Okay, then we need to stop the session. We're waiting for this communication to happen, and then we're supposed to stop the session And to stop the session is very easy. Of course, ETL file is going to be created. Instead of start, we just type stop. Stop. Yes? Perfect, ABC, ETS, great. So now, ETL file, it is to be analyzed in two ways. Either you run the software, and let me show you, that is called Windows Performance Analyzer. We're going to be back to this. Either we are using our OM friendly notepad. But of course, if you try to open ETL in notepad, you will be definitely more than happy to read what is going on over there, because it's all trash, bash, and whatever everybody could put inside. And no, it's not a readable format in the notepad. But to be able to open the notepad format, we need to have the trace RPT tool. And trace RPT allows us to convert abc.etl to output file abc.txt. And let me convert it. Command completed successfully. Fantastic. And inside that file, we'll be able, so this is over here, trace RPT. Don't mess it, of course, with tracert. It's a different tool. Trace report, RPT, yes? So here, ABC, okay, ABC and TXT. And this is the log file that we've got. I know, the level of being pleasant is kind of over, yes? Because it's like, oh no, now I need to analyze that. Don't bother. What do we know till that moment? IP address. So if the packet is meant to be sent to the certain IP address, we'll find that IP address over here. Okay, what do we know more? That when we are communicating with someone, what kind of communication we are doing? HTTP GET, correct? Mm-hmm. And GET is on what port? 80. Answer is on the higher ones, yes? But it is on 80. So why not search for that? So 10.10.10.200 on port 80. Do we have such? We do. Very good. Process ID responsible for communication? This. 1904. What's that guy about? Let's see. Task manager? Could be. Let's be old-fashioned. And then we can sort out by process IDs. 1904. We should be able to put and find out the service that is responsible for such communication. This guy. It has nothing to do with local security authorization subsystem. It has nothing to do with, we cannot get the ownership of the process. We clearly see who did that. And that's the victim. That's the guy that does that. Who, of course, coming, like going further, we can always go to services. Oh, not this one, sorry. Go to services, yes? Bank. And then we do have a very important service running, yes? Basically, this is how you are able to tie, like, who is communicating over the network? Who does that? To what is really causing the traffic, yes? So next time you're going to be having that such situations, you know which tool to run. And this is Logman. Logman uses ETW. Okay, tiny good advice whenever you are doing any kind of monitoring. One of the things that we've got from the process ID perspective is that whenever you establish a monitoring with the performance monitor, so Perfmon, Perfmon shows the instances. Instance 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, but what about, I mean, whenever you've got worker processes, many processes running on a web server, which one is the instance number 1 and which one is the instance number 2? We don't know, because process monitor, performance monitor, enumerates them just like that. So there's a tiny trick that please remember that whenever you change the registry value, then you are able, and as you see this before and after, you are able to monitor processes by their IDs. It's not by default. So here comes the question. In which kind of log format we should be able to establish a monitoring? Should it be, and let me go over here, data collector set. We're going to create the new data collector set. New. Okay, data collector set. Sounds great. Whatever default name could be. Let's say, no, we don't want to have it from the template. We want to have it advanced, of course. Performance counter, next. And the performance counter that I'm going to add could be, for example, the obvious ones, yes? So we can have, let's say, processor-related performance counter. So processor, bank, we can have it like this. Or we can, for example, have, maybe I could go to the something more interesting. It will not be a processor, but let's say process. That's a little bit better. Process. And then per process, we're going to monitor the processor time. And then here comes the question. Because, and then it's not total, of course, but all instances is so much better. Oh, and then okay, very good. For what kind of interval? 1 second, it's going to be pretty intense, but that's okay. Name, everything is beautiful, finish. So I just created a data collector set that's going to collect data. Don't get me wrong, we could be talking here about this tool for days. Not really hours, but days. Because it's so unfriendly sometimes that it's nice to have a look, excuse me, where into what kind of properties we should go to. If you go to the properties of the counter, performance counter, here you can find out this evil drop-down list. It says, what kind of data would we like to connect? In what kind of format? Binary, so BLG, either comma-separated. Well, comma-separated. We can open it in Excel. Do we need to open it in Excel? No. I'll show you the disadvantage of comma-separated Excel-friendly value, Excel-friendly format. Anyway, binary value, BLG, it's the cool format, and I would say the only one that we should use when you want to establish an efficient informative monitoring. Because BLG is like when you travel with a backpack and you wrap yourself, pack everything for vacation, you put things on the top. During the vacation, they get sorted out, they get like nasty, whatever. The backpack is getting bigger. It's a kind of awkward situation, but anyway. So at the end, you've got everything. But comma-separated value, it's so inefficient. You've got this beautiful suitcase that you open, compartments. Oh, socks here, pants here, and the shirt over here. Okay. And then you got it beautiful. And then you added everything. It's like, what if I would like to have another T-shirt? No compartments. Sorry. So, what about this? Sorry for the reference, but I travel a lot and that's... It's hard to get any kind of other example that is not related to travel, yeah? Anyway, so we're going to start it. And we are doing the monitoring, and we are saving this data in a Perflux, yes? Okay, very good. No, a couple of seconds, we're gone. Okay, now, guys, I'm going to start calculator. Now I'm going to start calculator. Calculator, bank. So we get this calculator. Okay, I can count something, whatever. Will this be in the log? Not with the comma-separated value. So things that are new, that are appearing within the log, that depends what you monitor, of course, they will not be there. Okay, so this one is running. I can, of course, stop the counter, and I can go to the BLG, not to the BLG, but to CSV file, of course, a comma-separated beautiful value. And I can go over here within the log file. I do have here the new data collector set. Yeah, I know. And then, yes, it's like that. Here, it's a CSV. Or where can I open it? Ooh, in Excel, it's so pretty. Okay, so if I do search for calculator, will I find it? Yes? Nothing. If I search because I had, for example, opened what? CMD. Yes? Will I find it? CMD is here. Of course, I need to expand it. But it's over there, or even more. It's over there. So basically, I'm able, and that's something, yes? I will find another CMD, of course, as well, yes? So find the next, there is probably some CMD, and so on. If things get close at the end, if you're going to go like to the bottom here, if things get closed, there will be an empty space. And that's it. BLG will get them all. BLG will get them all. You buy a new T-shirt, you put it. You buy another T-shirt, you put it. So there is just a small difference in monitoring. If you ever wondered which log format should you pick BLG, so the binary format. Because CSV... yes. What else can I add? Okay, so event tracing for Windows. XPerf. It's a really cool tool. What we can play with XPerf? What we can do with XPerf? Well, XPerf, that's a platform. So Windows Performance Analyzer, Windows Performance Toolkit, WPT, that's how it's called. You can download it for free from the Microsoft webpage. What kind of stuff can we get with those? Well, a lot of cool stuff. And let me give you an example from not really long time ago. It was like around 4 weeks ago. We were analyzing the application, web application for one of our customers. And there was a problem. Developers, they wrote it, yes? And they think the application, web application is the best. Okay, so IT pro said, okay, guys, we got your point, We're going to just buy a really cool, super-duper ever server, web server, that's going to run this app, and basically, we're going to be on the safe page. Even your app is not okay, we are okay, yes? So they bought it. Pretty expensive, really cool. Right now, they are using around 10% of the CPU every day. I mean, you paid for CPU and you don't use it, I don't get it, but okay. And then sometimes it goes like and they're like, is this server wrong or is app wrong? You know the story, yes? And developers like, we did all of the required tests that said our app is okay. And I'm like, I don't believe you, but okay. IT pros say, no, well, what can we say? Our operating system, I mean, it's Windows. It should be fine. We paid for the server. It should be fine. And there's this like, what should we do? Like a breach, yes? Somebody must come and slap them all. And basically, sorry, and say, like, hey, guys, maybe you should talk. And maybe, for example, you should establish a little bit more monitoring within your app. So how we are able to do such thing? XPerf will solve all the problems. Because within XPerf, you're able to monitor the timings even within the ASP.NET response within the functions. So if, for example, application is having a slowed responses within a certain time, you can still nail it. You can still go inside and verify it as an IT pro as well. You point the function, and then you say, it's not good. And then developers like, our function. And then you can talk. So yeah. At least about that, isn't it? Yeah? Sorry, I'm such a nasty person sometimes. Okay, so what I did a tiny trace. I got it ready, but I will show you first how I made it, yes? And that's gonna be the first thing to play with. Okay, so first of all, I got a tiny situation that I've got that is related to my notepad. Because every time, let me show you how does it work. Every time I open the file, I'm gonna do the small trace with Notepad. The reason why I'm gonna do it is because maybe I should duplicate my desktop because Notepad is so not responding that I haven't even brought it to the field to you. Notepad is not responding. I just opened the big file. That's what happened. Yes, not responding. Oh, that's so cool. My application is not responding. What is it doing right now? Like lazy, working, communicating with someone, or what? Well, with XPerf, we can establish a monitoring. Actually, I do have a command right now, so maybe let me launch like this. First of all, maybe let me close this beautiful. Okay, good. So first of all, I'm going to establish a monitoring with XPerf. What I'm going to monitor? Well, first of all, prod thread, so process and thread creation, loader will give me the basic information that is related to the kernel-related operations. So for example, any kind of graphics, any kind of loading things like drivers and so on, I'm going to get that. And then I'm going to do stack walk. Stack walk allows me to see what kind of functions were called for, what threads were doing, what kind of ASP requests were called for, and so on. So for Notepad, it's going to be relatively easy. And then I'm going to specify the profile. That means we're going to get the basic information, the most basic information about what is going on with my operating system in general. Okay, so we do this, and we launch it. Then we launch Notepad, and we wait. XPerf is monitoring this session, basically. And then later on, I am stopping the session, and I'm specifying, so XPerf stop D to the merge whatever one ETL, that's the name of my file. And then anything that was happening with Notepad, I will have it. it takes a moment because it puts it to the memory. Then basically you don't share your trace with anyone because it can contain a little bit unwanted information. Okay, goodbye Notepad. And then the reason why I have it loaded before we were talking about it is because I need to load the symbols to it. The symbols that we talked about last session. Symbols are definition of the functions that are in operating system. We'll need them to see instead of the exclamation mark and question mark, we need to see some names. Okay, so basically, by this tiny graph here, we see what was going on, more or less. We can take the computation. Computation means CPU usage. And here, CPU usage, it's sampled, and we do have some samples collected during the trace. By the way, if you're going to be loading symbols, make sure you're going to fast network, because it is a couple of megabytes, actually. You're going to download symbols for everything that happened. It takes a while. So that's why I don't want to show it, because otherwise my demo is going to be like 40 minutes. Okay, okay guys, so where were we in? Oh, and everybody's like already, so no, thanks. Okay, so what we're going to do? Here, we can sort stuff by weight. And here, this kind of line, the line that really stands out, this one also stands out. It looks like somebody was scratching my trace. But maybe not. But within Notepad, you see, this CPU, it's a utilization CPU utilization by process. We can see clearly here what was going on. And we see that it's Notepad. Okay. If I enlarge it, of course, you see that this is Notepad. But okay, I mean, it doesn't really surprise me that that Notepad took my CPU. I saw it when it was not responding. Eh? So what else? Well, that's why we are here. So I'm going to display the stack. You remember the stack walk parameter? So this was the one that allows me to go inside that trace and find out, function by function, what was responsible for making my Notepad not responding. And you know, it's a funny thing, by the way. I'll tell you why Notepad cannot normally open the large files. Okay, so here, we measure the weight. It's so simple. It's as simple as you see. Of course, understanding all these functions, it's somewhat important, but not fully, because they can indicate us the problem, and that's sometimes enough. So what do we see? Here, we do see the thread start. So it started, but the weight, it is sum, so it sums up to the top. It's kind of high, so the problem is inside. So how do we go further? Bang, we expand it. We see where we sum up the problem. So you see here we do not have a much difference because it was executing really, really fast. This number, it's bigger than this one, these ones, yes? Because it sums up the times. Okay, so the problem is still here. So we launched the thread of Notepad within Notepad. We loaded the file. Yes, we opened the file, so that's correct. There is something that did this for us. We go further. Send message W, so whatever the thread we've got inside. We still can go further. Here, there are some threads that were working in the back. Now we are getting to the point. We've got a Notepad, a reloaded file, user32.dll, and this comctl32.dll, and one more DLL. These are the operating system DLLs that are responsible with user interaction. Okay, so but still, the problem is there. We didn't even get there. And now we are almost done, because we see GDI32. What is this? It's an operating system DLL that is responsible for displaying primitive graphics. And the primitive for Notepad, that kind of corresponds with each other. You feel that, yes? So primitive graphics, like, for example, text. How it renders things. Well, really interesting, in a really, really interesting way. Because if we have a look inside, we've got still GDI, DDI, and so on. We can jump inside. Basically, what it does, it loads string by string and displays it to us. So if my file, and this is how big was my file, is 500 megabytes large, displaying one line one by one can take a while. Yes, that's why it's not responding. Why? Because, as I said, it's hard working. really, really hard. Okay, and it's like, how do we map this to what happens? Well, that's the point that we need to take some conclusions. Because these functions that are called through threads, they directly indicate what is going on. We are loading the graphic, the primitive graphic loader, displays one by one, line by line, and so on. If you were like, that doesn't really tell me much, that's okay. Go to browser, and then select it, copy it in Bing, Google, whatever, and then you will find the response. And sorry, I mean, I know it's another good advice with Google, but on MSDN, for example, you're gonna find that. That's why we've got symbols from, by the way. So somebody knows what is going on. What about third-party apps? For example, for Foxit and so on, for Adobe, there are symbols available. You just need to search for appropriate path and download those. What about your custom apps? Well, that depends on developers, because every time you compile the app, there is a PDB file there. But they don't share it. I don't know why. Ta-da! So if you do have a web app or any kind of app, and you are like, this is not okay, you ask, like, hey, developers, can you please provide us symbols? Symbols? What's that? Symbols will tell you everything about their app, by the way. Yes? Of course, I'm kidding. They don't have to hide anything, yes? But symbols will help you out to analyze the situation. OK, guys. Questions? Question. Good question. So the question is, how can you get to symbols if the server is not in the internet? Well, you can, first of all, you can cache symbols first. Second, from Microsoft webpage, you can download symbols. By the way, there are packages, yes? They're like 1 gigabyte large, something like that. You can download them offline and then install them, extract them. So you don't have to have access to the internet. You can have a symbol server, and the big teams of developers, they do have their own symbol server with their own symbols, and that server doesn't have to be in the internet. So this is possible without the internet connection. Oh yeah, oh yeah. And you can basically cache them. But if there's going to be something missing, you will not be able, of course, to debug it, get deeper, because there are no symbols, yes? So then you will need to go online, download the symbols, and then put them on the server side, yes? My symbol path, maybe let me answer the question more a little bit. Excuse me, because I don't feel positive about my answer, but now I'll feel better. If you go to trace, there is a configure symbol paths, yes? And that symbol path, it's pretty much the same as within the symbol type viewer. And that says, go to symbols on the C drive, and if you will not find stuff, go over here, yes? So I can cut that out, and it's going to be only C symbols or some of your servers. It can be, for example, network path, whatever, yes? So basically, you can download symbols from the local server or basically use just the cached one, and that's it, yeah? OK, now I feel better. OK, so if you have got, of course, some more question, there is a mic. Please stand up and ask it, yeah? OK, dumps. For memory dumps for troubleshooting. What about the memory? What about the memory? Can we, for example, find some interesting stuff within the memory? Well, yes, we can. And I would like to talk about the memory dumps, how to make them, what kind of information we can grab from them, and basically what is to be found within the memory. And I'm going to use a couple of things for that. One of the things that I'm going to use for the troubleshooting, for making the memory dump, it is a tool that is called Dumpit. The tool Dumpit, it is not a free tool, though, but only it's not free if you want to make a dump for the Windows 8.1. If you want to still make it and not pay for it, you need to make a dump for the Windows 8.0 or 32-bit operating system. The price for the tool is $199. It's not expensive. It's a very cool tool that allows you to make a memory dump. But if you don't want to pay for it at all, there are also many other tools that you can use to make a memory dump. For example, you can make memory dumps of the processes, and Task Manager is perfect for that. Quite surprising, but it's actually pretty nice, and it works in a really nice way. I would like to show you, at the beginning, one tiny tool. And I'm going to use that tiny tool to address what is in the memory, and that's going to be the welcoming thing to the memory. Okay, so I got it. Let me launch it, basically. Okay. And then I'm going to make a memory dump. So it's launching. It takes a moment. Oh, here we go. Okay, developers, now you can laugh at me, okay? And IT pros, be nice. So I wrote an application, okay? And that application looks like this. Yes? I know, it's so many menus and options, and it's a killer app, yes? What can it do? I mean, probably you will never even write it. It's like, how much seconds that's going to take me? Yes, like 3 seconds or 5 seconds. You can make a competition if you want. Ha, ha, ha. Yes? So this tiny tool, it verifies my connection to SQL Server. OK, let's use the simplest tool ever, Task Manager. Yes? I will need to find, because the tool's name is Verifier 2, I'm going to right-click, and then I'm create a dump file. This dump file over here. And the dump file is created. Okay, what I will do right now, I'm going to copy this, and then I'm going to use even the more simple tool, the simpler tool, which is called Notepad. Thank you. Exactly. Notepad. Of course, Notepad is not a memory analysis tool at all, but I'm going to go to File, Open, and then I'm going to put my file, Open, and then it takes a moment for it to open, yes? Okay, let's give him a chance. That particular Notepad, when it's ready, you will see it. You don't have to wait for it. We're gonna be back to this. It will show us anything that is in the memory of the certain process. And if there is any kind of password, if the process is doing something, if it's an app that is connecting somewhere, if this is an app to which user could authenticate to, for example, that depends, the password will be in the memory. So just a tiny starting point. Okay, let me take it out from your eyes. So it is still going on. It will take time, yes? OK, so this was a demo number one, not very astonishing. But how to make a full memory dump? Well, either you can use protsdump, either you can use the debugger, either you can use memdd. All of these are free. Dumpit, it's not. I will show you Dumpit. And the reason why I will do it is because it's a cool and simple tool. And I will make a memory dump on my D drive. And over here, basically, I got, of course, all my tools from the memory perspective. So let me go to, am I wrong? Let me see, quickly. Oh, no, it is my tools folder. Ah, I'm actually, yes, it is, yeah, come on here. Okay, tools, to do one, to do two. You know that. Okay, and then dump it. So over here, I got a couple of tools. One of the tools is this Dumpit that I mentioned. It is from Monsoon Tools, from Mathieu Suisse. He's a very, very nice forensic guy writing tiny tools. And then if I do Dumpit, then it asks me, are you sure you want to make a dump, memory dump? Yes. And if I say yes, of course, I got 16 gigabytes of RAM right now. Memory in use, 54%. And then it will dump my whole memory, and it will save it to the file. Forgive me, I will not create right now 16 gigabytes of data. But if I say yes, it will just start to create the memory dump. It's so easy. What can we find in the memory? So let me share with you a tiny story. Our developer, Michael, he's a kind of nice guy, but he's also a kind of nasty guy. And what he does, basically, is he is working on this kind of, that's his hobby. On this kind of help me, I've got a malware forums. And he asks people like, no problem, I will help you. And he really does. But he asks them for memory dump. Provide me memory dump, I will know everything. And he knows everything, including people's passwords, whatever they were having on the screen right now, everything. If there was a Facebook logon, password for Facebook, and so on. So there's a plenty of things. Anyway, I would like to show you some couple of things. First of all, let's see how our Notepad is doing, still not responding. First of all, through such dumps, we can, and let me show you, we can grab some information. So over here, I do have basically some examples. Yes, so the memory dumps, examples of the memory dumps. This dump, ELSAS, is you go to local security authority system, right click on it, and you make a dump. You know what is funny? It's like everybody's like, yeah, but how can you grab the password from the memory using Mimikatz or any kind of WCE and so on, while Mimikatz is recognized by antivirus? Well, easily. You make a memory dump of the local security authority subsystem, like I did, and you bring it to your own laptop. What of these actions is forbidden? So, what we do, I'm going to open it in debugger, debugging tools for Windows, over here, and then I'm going to load the library for Mimikatz, because this is local. I took a dump out. Load Mimilib, like this. Dot load Mimilib, bank, Mimikatz. And then I'm going to go exclamation mark, Mimikatz, on my laptop. Yes? And here comes the question. What kind of information can we see here? Can we see the user's passwords that were currently logged on to the certain box? Of course we can. Of course we can. So if there was a pool I logged on, I will have the pool as password in a clear text. It's just about this. Really, really simple. Of course, what is not simple is the fact that I'm using debugger. But you just open it in the debugger. You just load the library as I showed you. You can download it from the Benjamin's website, Benjamin Dilpe, it's the author of Mimikatz, and then you can grab it. So this is just another version of using Mimikatz without putting it on a server. Okay, so just a tiny, tiny thing how we can get to things. Okay, guys, but what I wanted to show you is, let me launch Python. And excuse me for that, we need to have Python right now. And Python. What can we grab, do with memory and Python? Well, there is a tool that is called Volatility. And Volatility can be as a standalone executable. Of course it can, but Volatility is better when it's in Python because it is customizable. So if, for example, you were, let's say, attacked, something happened and you don't know, or let's say it's better, you fire an administrator, and you are like, let's document everything before this guy leaves, just in case he doesn't leave us a gift. So what do? You do the disk dump and you do the memory dump. Memory dump will show everything that was running, including the standby so-called memory, which means things that memory manager did not put from the memory, and they are still there to be listed, played with, and so on. So if he opened up the command line and he closed it because he wanted to install something, you will clearly see that. How to do this? Very easily. Volatility. And then we will need to provide the file name. And the file name, I made already the memory dump of my operating system, of the whole machine. So basically, I will just put the file name over here. Yes? Okay. So what kind of stuff can we launch? So first of all, I'm going to specify the file, and then my file name is in tools, and then it's pool.dmp. It is a memory dump of the whole machine. And then I will need to specify the profile. So what kind of operating system we are measuring? Because memory is very much profiled. Every operating system has a different memory structure. Memory is structured differently. You know, sorry for this coughing. But this is kind of, I'm kind of laughing because I went out to get some fresh air. And you know, I'm so much in the computer rooms. It's like when you go outside the firewall, bad things may happen. So it's kind of like that, yes? And I'm like, oh, no, fresh air, oh my God. Sorry. Okay. So Win7. And then SP0, because this was the machine that we got. And then X64. And then there's a couple of parameters that you can use. For example, PSList will allow us to list the process in a certain memory dump. OK, so let's see. Well, unfortunately, it's a kind of creepy because it always takes time. Memory analysis, you need to be really patient. So either you're smoking cigarette, either you just need to do because it just takes time. But here, we see all of the processes that were running when the memory dump was made, including dump it, because this is the tool that I use for memory dump. Okay, but let's get back to the point. What can we see? Well, we can do CMD scan. CMD scan option, maybe let me show enlarge it. CMD scan option is the one that allows us to scan for everything that person typed within the command line, and so on and so on. So if you want to know, you perfectly know what was done, what is going on, what are the passwords, as I showed you, everything from this guy. But we're interested, maybe he did something before we took the computer away from him. And he did. CD tools, PSExec, minus S minus I minus D, CND.exe, Mimikatz, aha, he was launching Mimikatz. Okay, oh, he made a typo. We see everything. So, I mean, here comes the next question. If the domain admin logged on to the machine, is there a chance that he could see my password? Well, we don't know that yet. But you want to see what he saw? No problem. Or maybe this was she, you never know. Okay, so for that, and it's so easy, we can use consoles. And consoles, it's a little bit, it runs a little bit longer, but it will show us the possibility to see what people saw when they were executing certain commands. Is there a chance that I can have a print screen of this guy's saw, like beautiful one? Well, not the beautiful one, but yes, you can even get the print screen. And you can see what this person saw, what was the last moment, like, shit, on a link. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't have said it. Oh, no, crap. Oh, my God. they got me, or something like that. Yes, maybe he typed such thing. Oh, now Microsoft is going to fire me. Oh, no. Anyway, so that takes time, yes, as you see. And now we see everything. Okay, so he was running Mimikatz. Okay, what did he saw? Pula, pula, some passwords. What previously? He was launching this. He was browsing the Mimikatz folder to see what's inside. Is there anything more? Yes, there is. We need to wait. Then later on, he, for example, launched some other tools. So basically everything that he saw, we see as well. This is the clear text dump of what was seen by him. As I said, things cannot be hidden. Whatever runs in the memory, it's there. Yes, he was doing dir. He was going to services.msc, cd, tools, everything. Okay, guys. So this is basically that. And the last thing that I wanted to talk about is this memory thing. And it's like this. You know? Okay, so, golden ticket. What is this? How to grab it and everything? So, golden ticket, it's somewhat called for ticket that is a Kerberos ticket. And that Kerberos ticket, being a golden ticket, allows us to be administrator even if administrator changes passwords, because the ticket is valid not for 10 hours, like normally, but for 10 years. That would be cool. So is there a chance to do it? All the time, and I believe that you were on the Aaron Margozzi's session, he was talking about pass the hash and so on. So there is currently this tiny problem, a tiny issue really, that is going on in the system, that you can grab some things from the memory, and then you can still authenticate it with the hash, you don't need to have a password, blah, 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 blah. Okay. And all the time we say, what we are supposed to do whenever we do have, and let me turn off the machine and turn it back again, what we are supposed to do whenever we do have the administrator logging on to the user's workstations. Is it good or bad? Of course it's bad, because it leaves the password in the memory. How long is the password in the memory? Well, is it that when he logs off, it's going to be okay? Yeah, after some time. Correct. The best is to restart the computer, and I'm going to tell you why. Because even if he logs off, he still leaves one tiny thing in the memory, and that's his Kerberos ticket. This is not clean out. It stays there. Can I, as a user, steal it? Of course I can, if I am a local administrator. So there are these two conditions to be met. Okay, I'm booting to my machine to show you this. What kind of tools are we going to use for that? Well, we're going to use basically Mimikatz. Mimikatz in its new version that allows to grab you tickets from the memory. And you are also able to generate the Kerberos tickets. But since you need to generate the Kerberos ticket, it's kind of sucked from the finger. That's how we call it in Poland. Like, yes, if the red tram turns left and somebody knocks to my door, then it will be possible. Because you need to grab the hash of the Kerby TGT account that is responsible for issuing tickets, and that can be grabbed from the domain controller. So that basically means that we need to struggle a bit, yes? Okay, machine, go out. It's still booting up, yes? So that's yeah, we are waiting for that tiny machine right now. In the meantime, let me check out maybe how does it work for Notepad. Is the Notepad is here, so the one that we were, so the verifier to that we did a dump. I know basically what to search for, so I can go over there and search for that. But if your application runs and connects somewhere, basically that's the stuff that we're gonna find. Yes, so just a tiny, tiny, tiny comment over here, yes? Okay, okay. Now my machine is logged on, fantastic. So let me begin some small fun, yeah? What I showed you right now was this dump that we made, yes? So this was this Notepad that I said that we're gonna make a dump and then grab the password from it. Okay, guys. So here comes the story. There is this tiny machine over there. And then I'm gonna log on as administrator. And then I'm gonna log on using the password secret one, the password. And then the next thing that I'm gonna do, it's gonna be to access the share. And the reason why I will need to access the share is very simple, because I need to get the Kerberos tickets to browse the share, so SIFs, to my desktop. And that's basically what I would like to get. Anyway, I will need to open some Explorer, whatever that is, and then I'm gonna need to go to the some machine, 2012-DC, and then enter, and then share. I get some shared folder. That's okay, yeah? So I got it over here, so everything is correct. I can try to open some files. I got here something, some information, whatever that information is. The reason why I'm spending here some time is because I need to get that ticket within the memory, and it needs to stay there. So it's gonna be basically like this. Okay, now I'm gonna go to the full screen mode. What I will do what normally you do to not to store tickets in the memory. Okay, let me go here, launch this, first of all. Clist is the one that tells us what kind of tickets we've got. K-list, it's a built-in tool. Okay, bank, sign out. Very good. Now I'm gonna log on as the local user. So, Paula, and now you already know my password. Okay, I log on. And then I will open up the command line, cmd, run it as an admin. The reason I need to run it as an admin is because of the debug privilege that can be only grabbed whenever you are administrator. Who am I? I'm, of course, Paula. Very good. Clist, I don't have any tickets right now. I mean, it's not a secret because it's a local user. Very good. So I will go to the Mimikatz right now. So let me go, dear, and then I'm gonna go to x64, and then here I get a Mimikatz. So let me basically run it, Mimikatz. And within the Mimikatz, the first thing that I will do, I'm gonna export the tickets. Before we do it, let me launch the console, the other console, like this. And then, just to show you, I'm gonna do from this area, dir, /\, ws2012-dc, share, dc share, like we did as an admin. And then if the password is incorrect or whatever, yes? So over here, I will need to export these tickets. First of all, privilege debug. We got it, so privilege okay. And then we need to secur, LSA, and then we need to specify tickets. And then we need to export those. Export. Is it okay? Let me see. Okay, there is a small typo because it should be secur LSA. Okay, secur LSA, export. And these tickets are right now exported. And right now, let me find the administrator's ticket. It's a kind of strange view right now because I'm searching for the name here that's gonna be administrator SIFs that will allow to get me to that particular share. So let me go over there an administrator. This is the, not the one. Herbie TGT is not the one that we need. LDAP, it's not the one that we need. LDAP, and then it's going to be SIFS. Okay, we've got it, yes? So this is our ticket. And here comes the name. Yes, this is the name, administrator and so on. So there is the name of this ticket. So basically, I will mark it, and then I will select all the file. So the next is the dc-secure.tech.kirby. Okay, very good. And then I will assign it to myself as a user to be able to authenticate as a certain person. And now I need to specify Kerberos, and then PTT. Well, it's the Mimikatz logic, yes? So it's a Benjamin's logic. Then I need to put the name of the ticket. So DC, here we go, secure.tech.kirby. Very good. So I got that assigned right now. And over here, I should be able to browse the folder as an admin. Yeah, so just a tiny, tiny thing. Okay, guys. And so on and so on. This is what we basically can find in the memory. What is the lesson learned? Yes? Very, very simple. Never log on as the privileged account to the user workstation because you leave these traces behind. Yes? If you have to do it for a reason, restart it. To manage workstation, we don't have to be domain admins. We need to be local admins. To manage domain-related activity, yes, no doubt. But to manage workstation, we need to be a local admins. And if you want to generate the ticket that is valid for 10 years, it's basically a little bit more difficult. Of course, I'm happy to talk about it. But what you can do and what you have to do is to grab the hash of the Kirby TGT account. And that means the hacker needs to be on a domain controller. So that's what I call a little bit suck from the finger, because till that happens, it's some time. Yes, first he's going to do this, and then he's going to be on a domain controller. Yes, so just a tiny comment. Okay, guys, because I like to share, please don't forget to grab the tools. Every tool that we've been talking about, you will find it over there. Yes, so there is a link, and again, as I said, I'm bad at marketing, so if you go to our webpage, you go to tools directly. There is the square. You enter it, and then there's a link to tools. So basically, you can find it over there. I don't want to be on pictures. I'm ashamed. Sorry. Okay. So take a link, of course, and download all the tools. Practice them. But do not, please do not, run the tools on your local desktop that has a raccoon icon. Raccoon is this animal that is on my wallpaper. If there's an icon of raccoon, don't launch it, because it's evil. Yes? So anything, if you have doubts, what is raccoon? Anything, please, I do not take the responsibility for any business breakdowns. Yes? Please do use, and it's a normal thing, to run them on the virtual machine. And I hope that I managed to show you a couple of monitoring techniques, that it was interesting, that there was a couple of tools that you can take home. And I hope that you will, of course, enjoy the rest of your day and the rest of the conference. Thank you so much, guys.